Hi everyone, this is Tim at North and South Podcasts. Now, I've had a few people asking recently why it's called North and South, and the reason being is that my sister lives in Scotland and I live in England, and I wanted to do one with her commenting on things in Scotland and me commenting on things in England, but my sister felt she couldn't put the time into it, so that's where the North and South comes from. But partly it's also to do with the idea of things happening in different places and how they impact on us all. And I'm very happy today to be speaking to Jan from an organisation called JENGBA, J-E-N-G-B-A. I'll put the details in the notes later, which is Joint Enterprise Not Guilty by Association, which is an organisation that Jan co-founded. Now, as you know, my themes are politics, history, well-being, financial survival, creativity. And this might cut across a few of those, but it's primarily a kind of political thing to do with the judicial system and the law as it stands in this country. I was introduced to Jan through a work colleague who is part of the Diggers Festival in Wigan, which was unfortunately cancelled recently due to the death of Her Majesty the Queen. So I'm looking to speak to people from the Diggers organisation soon, but it's a real honour to speak to Jan because he's got a very, very important message for us today. So, Jan, thanks for giving up some time on a Sunday afternoon. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us what JENGBA, Joint Enterprise Not Guilty by Association, is all about?
Yeah, I'm Jan Cunliffe. I'm one of the co-founders of JENGBA. What happened is in 2007, both of my sons were charged with murder. It was pretty clear in the police station that they hadn't murdered anyone. And looking at the evidence, it was also pretty clear who had done what to the victim. So when the trial happened, when it went to court, bearing in mind I've got two 15-year-olds on trial for murder, five defendants were in a trial for murder, and I couldn't understand why there were five defendants when the boy that had kicked the victim had actually admitted to doing that to his mother in the police station, who then told the police about his admittance. So it never needed to go to trial as far as I was concerned. And it did, and it sounded like it was manslaughter. It was a fight on the street. A man came out of his house. He accosted some young people thinking that they caused damage to a mini digger down the road. Turns out it wasn't them. And a little bit of a fight ensued. And the victim was kicked very hard in the neck by one of the young people on the street that night. The person that actually admitted it to his mother in the police station. So for there to be a trial with five young people, four of them were actually children, all under the age of 18, just baffled me, and I couldn't understand what it was. And then all of a sudden, this phrase kept entering the courtroom, the phrase joint enterprise, and I didn't know what it meant. So I Googled it, and it didn't come up in a Google search other than a hip replacement therapist in Scotland. So I went to the library and I looked in books, law books, and I couldn't find it anywhere. So I didn't know what this phrase meant. Why was it a joint enterprise? You know, in my head, I thought a joint enterprise would have been bank robbers. You know, when they all go out together, they all know they're going to rob a bank. They all get into the bank and they all play a part in there. That was something I thought the phrase meant. But that was just me making it up as a mum who hadn't done a law degree. So we go through the trial process and it becomes pretty clear that the prosecutor isn't interested in who inflicted the killer blow. He isn't interested in the mother whose son told her that he'd done this. She wasn't a witness for the prosecution. She didn't go into the courtroom. She wasn't questioned about him confessing to this kick that killed the man. The whole point of the trial was about grouping them all together as friends, or as the terminology in the trial was, as a gang, as if they were gang members. I live in Warrington in a place called Cinnamon Brow. There are no gangs in Cinnamon Brow. It's a leafy suburb. It's not full of gangsters or drug dealers. I'm sure there might be a few there who nobody knows about, but that's not what we were talking about in this courtroom. It was all about who was present at the scene, but from the evidence, there were at least 25 people on the street that night, but only five were charged with murder. And it progressed, it was just an absolute nightmare to see that this is a murder trial. Throughout my entire life, I thought if it was murder, it was about getting solid, concrete evidence. It was about intent, the intent to murder someone, the mens rea, all of those things. We see it on television all the time when we watch documentaries, when we watch films about murder. It's intent. Otherwise, it isn't murder. But when you take more than one person into a courtroom, the British justice system doesn't need intent. When they use the phrase joint enterprise, there is no need for intent. There is only the need for the possible foresight that the perpetrator might do what they did. And when we got to the end of the trial and the jury were out to deliver the verdict, all of the lawyers were pretty scared that they were going to come back with guilty for all of them. And I couldn't understand how that was playing out in their heads, because it was very clear to me who had done it, exactly what had happened. It wasn't five young people. Unfortunately for my family, my eldest son, who was 15 at the time, and blind. So we're talking about a blind child here who had no involvement in any violence. He was found guilty. His younger brother was found not guilty, but my blind child was found guilty. So I was left thinking, right, joint enterprise did this to him, where you don't need intent, where you don't actually need to physically touch the victim. And the word foresight again sort of came back into my head. So my blind child, who can't see the incident happening in the first place, has now been found guilty of murder because he foresaw the actions of another who he couldn't see in the first place. It's unbelievable that the British justice system can do that. And that's
what year, what year was this? Sorry.
This was the incident happened in 2007.
Yeah.
And the conviction was in 2008.
Right. And what's the current situation with those five people who were found
Well,
guilty?
Two were found not guilty.
Yeah.
And they were acquitted. And three of them were found guilty. The 18-year-old who did admit to delivering a punch or a jab, as he said, admitted in the police station that if that jab contributed in a joint enterprise to the death of this man, then he was guilty of manslaughter, and he pleaded guilty to manslaughter. I personally think only two people should have gone to court for manslaughter, and two people could have probably been found guilty for manslaughter. But I think the prosecutor needed to take five in order to get a decent verdict. I think there's a fear with the police and prosecutors that they might get a not guilty if they don't sort of use joint enterprise. And rather than use natural justice to play out as it should do, as we all believe it should do, they would rather risk the lives of five young people. And they get life sentences when found guilty as well. I mean, my son was found guilty of murder, and he was 15 years old and blind, and he was given the highest sentence at the time, the highest sentence you could give a child at the time, which was a minimum term of 12 years. But it was a life sentence, which is 99 years. So he's going to be on license for the rest of his life for not taking part in any violence, for not encouraging any violence, for not even seeing what happened at the scene. His life is now over because of joint enterprise. So for me, it felt like I had to get this message out, because if it can happen to us, and if it can happen so easily, it's got to be happening everywhere else. It's got to be happening to other people. And as the months progressed and I found out, you know, I went to what's called an innocent group, which is a bit like an AA meeting where we all get together and everybody moans about what terrible injustices have been inflicted upon them. And I did a panorama as well, a panorama programme called Lethal Enterprise, which I think that aired in maybe 2009. And because of that programme, I met a lady called Gloria Morrison. And because we met, we both instinctively said to each other, we need a national campaign, because it's not just us, it's happening all over the country, predominantly in our major cities where there are more black people, because it's very easy for prosecutors to convince a jury that young black men are all in it together and that they are gang members and therefore get a guilty for them. So we set up the campaign and we put a letter in one of the prison newspapers thinking that maybe 50 people, maybe 50 or 60, maybe 100 people that would respond because it wouldn't be such a huge injustice is going on because we were still at the point of believing that British justice, was something to be proud of. And we got a response of 250 people just from a little article in a prison newspaper. We now currently have 1,500 people who have contacted us over the last 10 years. And we think that's just the tip of the iceberg. Because if you think about it,
are these people who've been convicted with that?
With joint enterprise, yeah. They've been convicted of a joint enterprise. I mean, we've got children as young as 12. We've got mothers who've been convicted with their sons. We've got sisters. We've got brothers. The amount of children that are convicted of joint enterprise is quite sickening as well. Because up until my son was given a life sentence, I didn't know we could give children life sentences. Mm. And I certainly didn't know we could give a child a life sentence for a murder that the trial process had proved he hadn't committed. Mm. So campaign-wise, it kind of looks like we've done really well because we've had two select committee inquiries and that was with a cross-party of MPs and they came out in our favour saying, this looked like it was causing miscarriages of justice. We got a case back to the Supreme Court and that case actually... the most senior judges in this country actually acknowledged that the law had taken a wrong turn back in 1984 and that foresight could not be used as intent. So we've had 30, in 2016, that was 32 years of injustice. And it was a really crucial landmark judgment. And we thought the people, at least the very least, the people that we support would be then given the opportunity to an appeal. But unfortunately, the judges in their wisdom, because they didn't want the floodgates, as they call it, they didn't want the floodgates of appeals to open up. They put a special little clause in there called the substantial injustice test, which means you have to pass this very, very difficult test. And it is a difficult test under any circumstances, but this is an even higher test. We now have a higher test for those people who have been convicted under the wrong interpretation of the law, which in effect, put it simply, means you have to prove you're innocent before you're allowed to go to the court of appeal. So although we broke it and proved that everything that we've been saying for years, for I think about 8 years, what we've been saying was correct, there's now a fight back with the Court of Appeal because even though they know it's wrong, they refuse to remedy the mistakes that they've made in the past. To date, there is only one person that's had the conviction quashed. And for me, I don't believe for one minute that a law can be misinterpreted incorrectly and only one person has ever been affected by it.
That's absolutely disgusting. Now, what we know from cases like the Hillsborough case, which for 30 years you had this kind of line put forward by the media, the government and the police that a certain thing had happened and then independent people look at it. This is long after that and meaningful can be done to remedy the situation. We know what happened there. We watch films, we watch documentaries where unbelievable decisions are made in a courtroom and you're thinking, how can this happen? And we have this idea that, like in liberal democracies, justice is about natural justice. And it's a bit naive to think that, but deep down, you do kind of think, don't you? Oh, there's enough good people out there that these glaring miscarriages of justice and these structural inequalities in the system, it will be remedied and it will be sorted out. We see it in Hollywood, we see it on TV, we read about it in the papers. And it comes down to this unfortunate thing, and that is the idea that when minorities, and I don't mean minorities necessarily like an ethnic group, but just people like individuals and groups who haven't got much power, when things happen to them, no one cares. And this kind of is then writ large in so many different situations around society that maybe one day it leads to a change in the law, which happened in 2016, but then they put forward a little amendment saying, oh, well, you've got the burden of proof to prove you're innocent. Not that they need to prove that you are guilty, but to prove you are innocent. And it's absolutely disgusting. And it doesn't surprise me because I did trade union work for a while. And I was looking at, I saw decisions made which absolutely disgusted me. And I thought, I sent an email to people in HR, the prosecutors, if you like. And this is in a non-legal thing. This is to do with, like, you know, in the workplace. And I said, I don't know how you can look at yourself in the mirror in the morning when you know that that's just happened. Do you know what I mean? And it absolutely disgusted me. But one thing doesn't surprise me, and that's this, is that there's a certain psychology with prosecutors and people in HR that we, you know, like when something happens and you go, come on, let's have a bit of common sense. Let's get together and make a decision. There's a certain attitude in prosecutors and HR that they just do their job and try to be, it's almost like an ego thing. You know what I mean?
It's like they're impartial to the humanity of what they're
absolutely.
Doing. You know, I mean, just because this is a common law and it can be used doesn't mean it has to be used. Mm. You know, it definitely is a loophole. It's a legal technicality in the favour of the Crown Prosecution Service. It's something, it's a cheat. It's a lazy way of convicting multiple people in the full knowledge of who's actually committed the crime. I think the CPS and I think prosecutors who do joint enterprise cases are absolutely despicable. Mm. I just think if it's immoral to murder someone, it's equally as immoral to put an innocent person in a concrete box for 10, 20 years that hasn't murdered anyone. Mm. You know, we need to make it really, we need to make it where it's dangerous for them. You know, if these
shocking.
People want, if these people, I mean, I know there are people who we have supported over the years that the torment and the trauma of this conviction has led to their suicides. So the prosecutor who has prosecuted these people in the full knowledge that they didn't murder anyone, to me, have led to their death. They are murderers too. But we don't seem to think, we think just because they've got wigs on and these posh voices and they know, you know, these highfalutin phrases that they use in the courtroom, that they're somehow special and more important than us. They aren't. They are immoral. They are disgusting. And most of them, the ones that I've come across in recent years, they need to go to prison as well. Because if you can actually stand there and scream and shout about putting a 12-year-old in prison when you know he hasn't killed anyone, then you are a despicable human being. You are worse than the person that actually probably killed someone because
that is intent.
That is intent.
Yeah.
And I think it's almost like we, you know, joint enterprise is a common law that doesn't make common sense and it is only used on the common people.
Yeah,
because they think we're trash and they think they can do whatever they like to us. And anyone who thinks that this can't happen to them, well, walk a day in my shoes because I never thought this would happen to me. You know, I had two houses at the time. I had a good job. I've got a master's degree. You know, you could say, oh, well, you know, you're the kind of person that this couldn't possibly happen to. That's rubbish. It can happen to absolutely any one of us. Do not think you're special because none of us are special.
Just going back to this case, was anyone who was found guilty of joint enterprise in this case from an ethnic minority?
In my son's case, no. But at the time, when it happened in 2007, it is a very political case and it was used by the media as a very political case. I would say that it got David Cameron into number 10. He used the case in the broken Britain rhetoric. He elevated the victim's wife to the House of Lords. From day one, my fight has been political. It's been a political fight. Our case has been political. And that makes me fight harder because it makes me realise that I must be absolutely 100% right because you wouldn't do that to someone who was wrong. Instead, you'd tell me why I was wrong. But rather than do that, the victim's wife, the trauma she's gone through, I understand that. But to then elevate her into a position of power in order to counteract anything I say or do is pitiful. It really is. You know, what kind of government does that? A government that wants to silence the people who are fighting for justice and equality and fairness.
That was sold, wasn't it, as getting someone who's been a victim of crime and putting them in the House of Lords to change things. So what you're saying is that was used as a way to counter the anti-joint enterprise protests that were happening at the time.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And she became the Victims Commissioner of England and Wales as well. There are lots of victims in this country. Lots of victims. There are people who have, you know, there are people who've had, I mean, Doreen Lawrence, for instance, you know, I get people saying, well, it was used against the murderers of Stephen Lawrence. It wasn't, you know, he was murdered in 1992. Nobody went to prison for that. Two men went to prison sort of, I think it was 23 years afterwards. And they didn't, and that wasn't joint enterprise that put them in prison. So the media have a lot to blame because they spin these stories as if justice has been served, when in reality, they should be questioning what's happening. They should be questioning why 12-year-olds are being put in prison. You know, I mean, there's a case in Newcastle, 10 children have been convicted of one person's crime. Even the judge in that, in the sentencing remarks, because I went up there to listen to it, actually said for more than one of them, he doesn't even know what part they played. So why give them life?
Shocking. Do you know, in the past, we've had like anti-trade union laws in this country. They might even be coming back as hard as they used to be in this country, like with the Tolpuddle martyrs. We've had the idea of the conspiracy laws, which I know that they've changed in recent years, where you could literally, if two people discuss something, you could literally throw them into prison for long periods of time. Now, this obviously, again, because it affects minorities and people who aren't that powerful, etc., and it doesn't affect huge swathes of people at any one time. It seems to go beneath the radar. But there's been cases like this in the past with Derek Bentley, you know, the let him have it when a policeman asked for the gun and he shouted, let him have it, Chris, meaning give him the gun. He gets shot and the young guy is hanged. He had learning difficulties at the time. He's since been pardoned, but I don't think that's helped him too much. You've also got the film The Mauritanian recently, where because a phone call was made in someone's house, some guy ends up in Guantanamo. It's been turned into a film called The Mauritanian, which is excellent. And I don't know if you've seen Making a Murderer, where that young lad who's vulnerable apparently confesses. Now, it went to appeal. He was nearly released, and two judges gave diametrically opposed conclusions. I don't know if you've watched those series about the machinations of the judicial system. He was at, two judges gave unbelievably different interpretations of the same evidence, and both of them, you would have been totally convinced by either of them. And that's the danger with these highfalutin decision makers. They would literally persuade you to do anything and buy anything with their highfalutin language. That's why they are employed in that way. And that's the big danger in the courtroom, particularly with people who haven't got the money to defend themselves as much as others, which is the other big elephant in the room in this country. We get told, oh yeah, we've got a great judicial system, innocent until proven guilty, etc., etc. And again, yeah, you might go to other countries around the world and say it's much worse there, but our whole judicial system is based on whether the people who are defending themselves have got access to wealth, and that ultimately underpins the whole thing. And none of this surprises me, and I don't think it'll surprise many of our listeners, but we still have this notion, like, you know, British values and all this, that somehow we're better, and these kinds of travesties of justice and miscarriages of justice don't happen here, and it does, and until it impacts on you
and
directly.
And it's always happened. I mean, when we say, I mean, that phrase, the British justice system is the envy of the world, I don't know who coined that phrase, but it wouldn't have been a working class man or woman, you know, when they were getting put on a boat and sent to Australia for stealing a ribbon, you know, for 40 years of hard labour for stealing something of very little value. We're not the envy of the world. I mean, we colonise the world, and all the countries that we colonise, we have given them our rotten justice system. Yeah, and it's quite telling, actually, because in 2016, when we did the Supreme Court, it's quite telling that the actual case that caused the wrong turn was Chang Wang Su, and it was in Hong Kong. Yeah. It's almost like in this country, we have to blame Hong Kong for our own mistake. Well, it's the British justice system that then took it on board and used it mercilessly for the next 32 years. You know, it's like they can't take responsibility. And the reason they don't take responsibility is because they think they're absolutely 100% right to do this to us.
Absolutely. And I think another aspect of it is we've exported a lot of our judicial practices.
Yeah.
And a lot of them judicial practices, we've since changed some of them here, but they haven't there. And they're still used against people who are LGBT, still used against people who are protesting, etc., using that old judicial system. So let's be honest, who are the people who stand up and defend, you know, British justice? It's like Jacob Rees-Mogg, Jordan Peterson, those kinds of people who, when it comes to the crunch, will have access to a lot of money to defend themselves if required in under Canadian law or British law or wherever they may be. And yeah, I don't doubt that you know, we've got a better system than many other parts of the world. But to say that that means you don't reform it or change it,
I think,
that's
you know,
where it comes down to.
One of the things that I sometimes think about is, you know, when you brought up Derek Bentley, because everyone in the country didn't want him to be hung because they knew he hadn't shot a gun and therefore he hadn't murdered anyone. And the same with Ruth Ellis as well, the woman who was hung and no one wanted that. And they were instrumental in getting rid of the death penalty and getting rid of, and for Derek Bentley, it was called the felony murder rule. And we got rid of that as well, because when you have to hang someone, the public find out more of the truth and you know, the morals behind whether this is right or wrong. Now, if we still have that death penalty, now, and I know the public tend to feel more compassion for a teenager or for a woman. So let's go down the woman line. If we were still giving the death penalty for murder, just our campaign alone has 109 women who would have already been hung. Some of them as young as 18, mothers and grandmothers, who the trial process proved they didn't even commit a single bit of violence, let alone murder. So if we still have the death penalty, you could guarantee we'd get rid of it, but we'd also get rid of joint enterprise as well, because the public would say, why are we hanging people who haven't killed anyone? Yeah. And what they've done is they've replaced the death penalty with an equally as violent life sentence, mandatory life sentence for crimes that they haven't committed. And they're getting away with it because it's hidden under a rug and people can't see it. And we've got a media that goes along and runs with whatever the CPS tell them, whatever the judges say, because these are so learned and wonderful. But in actual fact, you know, without the media, they wouldn't get away with it. Because it's a struggle to get out this information out there. When this first happened to my son, everyone kept saying, go to the papers. He's like, well, go to the papers. You've got his face on the front cover calling him a vicious murderer. Like, they're going to turn around the next day and go, oh, actually, we got this wrong. No, they are our enemy. You know, the mainstream media is our enemy. And we need to, you know, stop buying these trashy pamphlets, because that's all they are.
Well, that idea of a moral panic and a media frenzy, I mean, it's well documented that kind of leads to this kind of snowball effect. I once was involved in a protest in Liverpool outside a store about the fact that they used child labour and underpaid people in the developing world. And anyway, the evidence was there. We produced a leaflet with evidence on, and when they looked at it, they couldn't contest any of it. We sent a big letter to the local newspaper and said, listen, we're doing this protest for these reasons. Next day, whoever's the PR at that particular company had obviously spoken to the newspaper, and there was just a glow and thank you to this particular company for coming to Liverpool and opening up a new store. And as you say, that mainstream media narrative, it's very, very hard to get any real traction unless you've got something like an innocent person has been hanged, or a child in Liverpool has been killed because of it. If it's a child abroad, it doesn't break through.
Or a middle-class woman.
Yeah, yeah, you know, yeah, absolutely.
In a big house somewhere. Yeah, you know, yeah. I mean, you know, the Daily Mail doesn't like working-class people, so, you know, we don't care. And many times I've been told by journalists and documentary filmmakers that the British public doesn't have an appetite for miscarriages of justice. Well, how do you know? I think they do. I think everyone's got an appetite for it.
Yeah. All our dramas and TV is all about miscarriages of justice. Yeah. That's them defending their position.
Yeah.
Jan, there is something else that concerns me. I've read of a few cases recently where a group of people have discussed something on WhatsApp, and all of a sudden a group of people are found guilty of a crime that was not carried out by anyone other than one person, but because people have used particular words, often when they were angry, it's been taken out of context. Now, I've done it myself where, you know, you'll have a family member saying, oh, I'll kill him, about the brother. They've got no intention of killing them. And it's very dangerous when language out of context is used against people. Have you had any experience of this in the joint enterprise world?
We've had lots of it. We've had lots of it. I mean, there's one case in particular, and you know, where it was just a young person saying, I'm so angry, I could kill him. You know, yeah. Like I, you know, and like you say, I don't think there's a person in this country that hasn't said that, and I don't think they've ever meant it either. You know, I mean, we don't. I mean, anyone who's going to go out and murder someone, it doesn't put it in a text to a couple of hours beforehand, do they? And it's almost like, oh, sod's law, that's happened afterwards. But I never write anything like that anymore, because I just can't, because I know that that's the kind of evidence that's used against you. Even the videos that you watch on social media will be used against you. So if you watch a video and there's knives in it, or you know, a YouTube video with violence in it, the prosecutor will say that you have a propensity to violence because this is what you watch. We've got young people who've made music videos. I mean, drill music and rap at the moment is the bulk of evidence in a lot of cases. And it's the narrative is basically to convince the jury that a young person is a gang member. And how we convince the jury of that is because they listen to rap music or drill music, which will have lyrics in it that could be, you know, a bit violent lyrics, if you like. So people are going to prison for their choice in music. Whether we like their choice in music or not is, you know, is another matter. But people are going to prison because of their culture, because of their choice in music. Some people have gone to prison because of the choice of lyrics that they have written, because they're trying to express themselves. Because the prosecutor will say that that means you are that kind of person. If you write lyrics like that, and if you listen to music like that, then you obviously are a violent person, even though the incident that they're in court for proves that they have committed no violence. And many of the, in fact, most of the people that we support, the huge bulk of them have no criminal record in the first place. So they've jumped from being an honest, normal citizen to being a murderer overnight.
And not only that, not only did he not take part in any violence, but they often say nothing. Yeah, about encouraging it, and yet just because they're there, these are dangerous, dangerous things. Like if you heard about this in China, or you heard about this in a developing country, you'd be going, "Oh, look at that crazy justice system!" And yet it happens here. And as you say, you know, where's the Daily Mail?
There's a whole department in the Crown Prosecution Service. In the CPS, there is a department where they focus solely on looking at social media output and finding, you know, if there's a case, they will trawl social media and they will try and cherry pick, and they'll find something in order to use against the person.
Yeah. Well, that's ideology, though,
isn't it? It's almost
like,
you know, we don't need the police anymore to find real evidence. You know, you can, if you don't need real evidence, if you don't need blood spatter or fingerprints or DNA or a knife with someone's fingerprints on, if you don't need that anymore, we don't need the police then, do we? You know, we just need a prosecutor.
But the police are getting cut to the hilt themselves now as well, so it's easier to do that, isn't it? But the thing is, yeah. I, whenever I've had anything to do with people who prosecute HR, I don't like them. I think you are not acknowledging the reality of the situation. You're coming up with a narrative, an extreme narrative, to get the harshest sentence you can. Now, people say, oh, that's how it works. That's the justice system works. We know that there's inequities and inequalities. In the States, when I've seen documentaries over there, you often have like an attorney general, a local attorney general, who is elected, and they have to look tough on crime, etc. You know, these are the dangers. But this is happening in, like, apparently the liberal democracies, the ones with the best justice systems. And we need the media to get onto this, because the Daily Mail, the Express, those kinds of papers, they need to get hold of this and say, listen, this isn't good enough, and they need to get their people involved.
There's a lot of money in this. I mean, there is a lot of money in human misery. You know, if you think about it, you know, slavery was, you know, it was legal, but it was immoral and it was wrong. And there was a lot of money made out of that. Our prison system is exactly the same. If you're putting people in there, I mean, some of the people who have come to our campaign are in prison for 45 years. We've got young people with 30, 40 years in prison, and they haven't killed anyone. This is a new form of slavery. And it's quite telling that this government wants to open, is it 6 more prisons, 6,000 more prison places? Mm. Who for? Mm. How are you going to find those 6,000 prison places? Oh, I know. Let's just keep charging loads of people for one crime and banging them all in there. It's an industry. And if you think about how the rise in the prison population has risen so drastically, and you put that, and you put parallel that with the use of joint enterprise, you can see why it's doubled in a matter of 15 years, because in the last 15 years, joint enterprise has pretty much predominantly taken over in the legal system, because it's a really easy way to convict people. I mean, I would say if you're going to go on a jury, if you're going to be a jury member, don't keep falling for this crap. Yeah. Stop convicting people, you know, stop saying yes and saying guilty to murder when you've seen in that courtroom who murdered who. Don't convict them all. Stop doing that, because the more the public keep doing that, the more they'll keep running with this. Who are these jury members who think it's okay to say guilty to murder to people who haven't murdered anyone?
Yeah.
It's nuts. Unfortunately, it really is nuts.
Unfortunately, you know, as Churchill said, you know, if you want to be put off democracy, just go out and speak to someone in the streets. Now, I'm a big defender of democracy, and I'm a big defender in trial by jury, but people can be very, very irrational. You get groupthink. You get the person who speaks the best with these juries.
You get serving police officers on juries as well, which, you know, and that's not because they've gone in there and they're not supposed to be in there. There are quite a few of our cases as well, and there's a police officer on the jury. I mean, I didn't think that was allowed, but it is. Apparently, it can be. Yeah, you can go in there on a jury. Isn't there enough people in this country to have a proper selection where you don't select lawyers or judges or police officers?
But not only that, I think judges need to throw things out and be bolder as well. I know judges would like to go by what's happened before, and occasionally there's precedents, etc. But let's appeal to the judges, and let's appeal to these prosecutors, the ones who've got a conscience. Not a conscience, sorry, people who can actually look at the evidence and not push for these ridiculous things. And I've seen it happen before. There's a great film about the young girl who was executed by the Nazis, and I can't believe I forgot her name. She's a big inspiration to me. She was part of the White Rose group, and they gave out leaflets, anti-Nazi leaflets, towards the end of World War II. And there's a great discussion on the film about her, where Sophie Scholl, the name is.
Yeah.
She's having a discussion with the prosecutor, and he's just saying, oh, this is the law. This is the law. You broke the law. And we need more people to just... I understand in Nazi Germany, like, you've got to be seen to be doing your job, but this is supposed to be a liberal democracy. Let's stand up for justice, and let's stop these ridiculous, appalling miscarriages of justice happening. And by the way, Jan, given your side of things, I think it was really big of you to acknowledge the trauma on the other side to that lady who went into the Lords, the tremendous trauma that she's gone through.
Absolutely. I mean, as a campaign, we are always mindful that there is a victim. You know, we never forget there is a victim.
Yeah.
But they're not our victims.
Yeah.
Victims
are vulnerable, though, as well. And
in
that Making a Murderer documentary, you can see that the family, they want convictions for the fact that they're...
Yeah.
Their family members being killed. You know, that's why we have justice, because we don't want people who are angry and, you know, lashing out. Yeah. That's what it's meant to
be. If you think about it, you know, the family of our victims, right, they never get no peace, because innocent people are now serving time, and we are, you know, as a campaign, we won't stop. We don't want to hurt people's feelings, but we won't stop, because we didn't do this to the victims or their families. The justice system did it. And we will keep going back to the Court of Appeal, and we will keep going into Parliament, and we will keep speaking our truth. But we can still be mindful that there is a victim and there is a family. But our justice system isn't mindful of that because they don't care. The people who do this to them don't care about them. And it's quite telling that we actually care more about them than the system does. Because if they did care, they wouldn't have put this on any of us.
Just on that.
The people I support are victims of a miscarriage of justice.
I was talking to someone recently who's had a few issues with universal credit, again, someone in a vulnerable position. And I said, like, you know, have you spoken to someone? Like, surely they must care to hit. And she went, they don't care. They don't care. They're paid not to care. And I know a couple of people who've left the Department for Work and Pensions in recent years and said they couldn't keep doing to people what they were told to do. It's just absolutely disgusting. And, you know, it's a systemic issue. But I think the campaign you're involved with, we're going to put your website up so people can visit and find out about cases. Can they contribute financially and support you in different ways?
They can. We've got a little PayPal thing. They can either send a check to our office in London or Manchester. Well, London's probably better. We've got an office in Manchester, an office in London. We've got a Twitter account, and we're always on there giving out information about what we're doing next. We've got a Facebook page. We've got the website, which is www.jointenterprise.co. And one of the main thing that I would like to tell your audience is, if you get arrested and it looks like you've been arrested with a lot of people and it looks like they're going to use Joint Enterprise, ring one of us. Find out on our website whether it's my number or someone else's number, and we will try and get you a lawyer. Don't take the duty solicitor. Wait, even if you have to sit in the police station for 5 days until a decent lawyer gets to you, do that. Because, and contact us before you go to trial. You know, don't wait until you've been found guilty. Yeah. Contact us before you go to trial, because when people have come to us beforehand, because of the law change in 2016, there are certain things you can say and you can instruct your solicitor to do and get the case dismissed, whether it's at the beginning, in the middle or the end. And people have been saved, but it's still going on. And because people don't think joint enterprise exists anymore, or it doesn't still exist as it did before, they're wrong, because it does, because the prosecutors haven't all suddenly retrained. And now they know what they're doing, and the judges haven't either. So we have to still keep treating it as it was before. And I can only help you. I can help you better if you come to me before you're convicted, rather
my
than
experience. Afterwards. My experience of working with against HRs before as well is they'll try and pull the wool over your eyes and get away with it unless you've got someone representing you. You know, they've got no integrity. So I'm sure it's the same in the world of prosecutors.
It works on ignorance, doesn't it? People's ignorance and people's trust. If you people trust and they are ignorant of the law, then they're gonna get sucked into it and chewed up at the other end. Yeah.
After my experience as a trade union work, I've said to everyone, I said, if you ever get arrested or accused of it, and I said, don't say a word. Don't say, listen, it wasn't me, I was there. Don't say a word, because I've just seen the behaviour of the other side too many times.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
not to say that things need to be investigated, that things don't need to be investigated and bad things haven't happened, as you've acknowledged. It's saying justice needs to be carried out, not injustice carried out to look like justice.
You see, many of the judges now and prosecutors as well don't like you using your legal right to no comment. Mm. They then use that against you in the courtroom. What I would say is make one comment and one comment alone, and that is, I am innocent, and say nothing more.
Yeah, okay. I'll bear that in mind. Because all
innocent.
You need to do
there's nothing else you can say, you know. And if you're in court pleading not guilty because you are innocent, say that in the police station and leave it at that.
Yeah. Saying this though, all joking aside, I mean, you can be on a protest now and someone falls over, and you'll happen to be around there, and all of a sudden, oh, you were on the protest as well. That's joint enterprise. These are the kind of dangers that can happen with these things. But Jan, thank you very much for your time, and thank you very much for telling us about Jengbe and the pursuit of proper justice. That's all that we're asking for, proper justice. Any other final comments before we go?
Well, at the moment we've launched a private members bill, and it's done its first reading, and it passed the first reading. But we know we're going to come up against trouble when it goes to the second reading. So it's called the Criminal Appeals Amendment Bill.
Yeah.
Write to your MP and tell them, as their constituent, you would like them to support this bill because you believe in the bill. And you'll see it on our website. But yeah, just write to your MP and say, and it doesn't matter what they write back. We don't care what they write back. We want them to, we are the public. We vote for them. If we want them to support this bill, then they have to support this bill. So insist on them supporting the bill, because once that bill is passed, it'll have to go through the House of Lords and such. But once that bill is passed, the people that I support that were convicted under the wrong law will have the opportunity to an appeal, which is all any of us want, the opportunity to an appeal, which has currently been taken away from them all.
That is on the website, isn't it? There's a special page there with that on. So after this, I will send that to my local MP and see what happens. Jan, I want to thank you for giving up your time and telling us such an important thing. And again, there are so many things like this which you just don't hear about. And until it affects you and impacts on you, and let's be honest, this could happen to anyone. I spoke just a moment ago. I think you might have just lost contact with me. People go on protest now. Someone falls over and bangs their head and you're like five people away, and then a few of you are arrested. We know what the government is looking to do with, like, peaceful protest. And
they're already charging protesters with joint enterprise. Yeah. They're already doing it. You know, I think some have already gone to prison for quite, you know, a few years. It's already here. And you know, if you ignore what I'm saying about murder and then about manslaughter and then about lower, as the levels of the crime come down, you know, nobody cares about murderers. You know, as it comes down and then suddenly you find that you're at a protest or you're walking past a protest because you've ignored the top level and it's trickled right down to the bottom. There's nothing anyone can do for you anymore because you've ignored it. You know, they're coming for us all and they'll get us all. And you will be that person who's just minding their own business. Bang. It happens so often. Mm. You know, I think someone once told me that you're more likely to be a miscarriage of justice than you are to win the lottery. We all put a lottery ticket on, don't we? You know, anyone absolutely. Who puts a lottery ticket on, just remember that you're more likely to go to prison for a murder you didn't commit than you are to win the lottery that Saturday afternoon.
Jan, thank you very much for your time. All details for Jengbe, I'll send the links to you for you to check and we'll put them in our notes. And I'm going to write to my MP. I'm going to write it down now. So thanks for your time and thanks for your passion, and I just hope justice comes not just within your life but right across the world, because this is about democracy, justice and fairness. So keep up the good work.
Thank you. No justice, no peace.
Hi everyone, hope you enjoyed that very important podcast with that very important message. Please share, subscribe, like this podcast on Spotify and YouTube. If you can contribute financially, see the notes at coffee.com to contribute to me. If you want to contribute to Jengbe, please go to their website. Please contact your local MP about the joint enterprise change to the law that they're looking to do. And I'm on TikTok. Believe it or not, so you can follow me on TikTok and Twitter as well. Keep the faith, hang in there, see you.